annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2027. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
BBC News, I'm John Shea. The US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has reiterated the importance of de-escalation in the Middle East after a presumed Israeli strike on Iran in response to Tehran's direct attack on Israel. Speaking at a G7 meeting in Italy, Mr. Blinken refused to comment on reports that Israel had informed Washington of its plans for a strike before they were effected.
We're committed to Israel's security. We're also committed to de-escalating, to trying to bring this tension to a close. You saw as well, or you'll see soon in the G7 statement, a commitment to hold Iran to account for its destabilizing activities, holding it to account by degrading its missile and drone capabilities.
The strike appears to have been limited in scope, with no casualties or major damage reported. Iranian state media have played down the incident. An Iranian official said there were no plans for further retaliation against Israel. Yolande Nell is in Jerusalem.
This morning, Iran's Fars news agency said three explosions had been heard near an army base in the city of Isfahan. While state TV said three drones were spotted, it later reported the situation was normal and that no ground explosions had occurred. It said that nuclear facilities in the province were not affected. On Saturday night, Iran launched more than 300 attack drones and missiles at Israel. With the help of allies, most were downed before reaching Israeli territory. While world leaders had been urging Israel to show restraint and avoid steps that could lead to a wider war, Israeli officials had indicated that they had to hit back for Iran's strike to deter it from acting again.
Ukraine's military says it has shot down a long-range Russian strategic bomber used to fire cruise missiles against it. Russia's Ministry of Defense has said a bomber crashed in southern Russia on its return from a combat mission. The governor of the Stavropol region has published photos of the wrecked plane. He said two of the crews survived, one died, and a fourth is missing. The fastest finishers in the Beijing half marathon have been stripped of their prize money and medals following a public outcry that three Africans allowed a local Chinese runner to win. Stephen McDonnell reports from Beijing.
Last weekend, China's He Jie crossed the line first in the Beijing half marathon, but only after three runners from Kenya and Ethiopia allowed him to overtake them. Kenyan runner William Nangat later explained that he did this because Chinese champion He Jie was his friend. However, sports officials have not viewed this kindly after outrage on social media from Chinese fans saying it made a mockery of the race. The three African runners who'd been acting as pacers and China's He Jie have now been stripped of any prize money or other awards and had their final placings cancelled.
This is the latest world news from the BBC.
Are you excited to get out and see some great live music while wiggling your toes in the grass? Do you yearn for delicious food and a cornucopia of local brews? Craving the whimsy of browsing local crafts or creating your own artwork? Are you ready to usher in the summer music festival season? Then get to Warner Park on Sunday, May 19th for Wartstock, presented by WORT and Union Cab of Madison. Check out this great lineup. At noon, Son del Atlantico ignites the day with hot Afro-Colombian flair. At 1:20, Strings to Rome brings lively bluegrass and folk. At 2:40, Blue Stem Jazz unleashes undisclosed Sims from Chicago. At 4 is Roscoe Foster and the Rascal Theory, ready to funk things up with their mix of rock, blues, funk, and soul. The Forward Marching Band will rouse the crowd into some good old sing-along fun before Boiled in Lead tops off the day at 5:30 with their Twin Cities-based Celtic Sound. This year also marks the 20th year of No Crap on Tap, Madison Homebrewers and Tasters Guild is providing an ever-changing cornucopia of fine local beverages from more than 20 local breweries. More information is on our website at WORTFM.org. Wartstock is proudly sponsored by Union Cab, along with Summit Credit Union, Dane Arts, MG&E Foundation, Madison Homebrewers and Tasters Guild, Hoyos Consulting, WSUM 91.7, and Blue Stem Jazz. See you there.
Dickie Betts. Happy birthday, Coco. Hey, it's the day before 420. What do you even do on the day before 420? Are there like preparations? Staples have 420 decorations you can buy and things like that? Or maybe people just rest up before getting good and baked. Everyone who's done weed, and you know who you are, has a favorite marijuana story, and a least favorite. My favorite marijuana story happened in Hawaii. If you want to hear it, I guess you're going to have to. It was on Oahu in the year roughly like 1977. Jim Wilson, you may be too young to remember American Express traveler's checks. Do you know what those were?
No, is that something like, it's like a checkbook that you write and it's in international currency, right?
Close enough. That's a good guess. They were temporarily issued checkbooks that were redeemable for the amount that was printed on the check. So 20s were 20s, 100s were 100s. And you got them at the bank and you signed them in front of the teller. And then each one of the checks you signed, and then right next to your signature was a line that you signed again, only this time in front of the person you were paying. A lot of you may remember this. And so you would sign it again in front of like the restaurant cashier or shop owner or somebody. And that showed that it was actually you, that the two signatures matched. It seems pretty Neanderthal now. But anyway, In Hawaii, I've got a pocket full of those traveler's checks. And we got our hands on some Maui Wowie. That was a cash-only purchase. And we torched it up in a dorm room at the University of Hawaii and then floated around off campus, baked out of our minds. And we went to a convenience store to get a bunch of snacks. Brilliant idea. And I pulled out the traveler's checks to pay the cashier guy. But I couldn't match my signature. I signed a $20 check. And the clerk looked at me, he shook his head no. And I asked him for another try, and he said, go for it. And then another. And as hard as I tried, I could not match my own signature. And I burned through like three 20s, none of which he would accept. Now, that's Maui Wowie. I did, however, once we returned to the dorms, write a song that night. So it wasn't a complete loss. So happy 420 Eve. Everybody, at the end of the show this morning, giving new meaning to the words Friday Buzz, WRT Business Development Director Doug Holtz will drop by the studio, and we'll get a preview of the big WRT 420 celebration on the books for tomorrow night at the Crystal Corner. That's going to be a blast. Also, this hour, we'll anticipate the 100th anniversary celebration of Fighting Bob La Follette's run for the president back in 1924. Progressive magazine editor Norm Stockwell is here, along with a a very special surprise guest who we'll introduce you to as well. And first up, a conversation with the legendary San Antonio rock musician Alejandro Escovedo in anticipation of his performance at the Barrymore Theater a week from tonight. That show's sure to make the list on today's Encore's Picks, which will come your way at about 8:35. Good morning to the Crack Friday Buzz team, music producer and DJ Encore Malhotra, engineer without peer, Jim Wilson, who has never heard of Traveler's Checks before, and that's fine. I didn't think you had. And welcome back to our online producer and front desk supervisor, Elliot LeBrun, who actually appears to have taken the world's longest trip to observe the eclipse in Vermont. Way to stretch that out, Elliot, but we missed you. It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. Let's get buzzing.
For our turn, 43, bury me beneath the justice tree. Bury me with the lies I told. Bury me with a rusted sword.
Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. Thank you for that encore. That's Bury Me from Alejandro Escovedo's new album, Echo Dancing. My first guest is the very same performer, and Alejandro performs a week from tonight at the Barrymore Theater. Folks, there's only three words to say about that. Don't miss it. Alejandro Escovedo has been reinventing rock music since the 1970s, and based on the last couple of projects, including Echo Dancing, from which we just heard, released just this month, he's nowhere near finished pushing the boundaries. Actually, Echo Dancing is a case where he reinvents his own music, but more on that in a minute. Escovedo is a classic example of the old saying, if you know, you know, but if you don't know, whether it was turning the waters of punk music and the Nuns, roots rock with the True Believers, or putting the alt into alt country with Rank and File, Escovedo's music arouses, comforts the afflicted, and afflicts the comfortable. This intro could go on and on, but that would be ridiculous since we can talk with him right now. Alejandro Escovedo joins us by phone, and welcome to the Friday Buzz, Alejandro.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for starting your morning with us. I know you play at Kalamazoo, Michigan tonight, but where are you right now?
Yeah, we're in Toronto, actually. We're about to leave and head for Kalamazoo.
Thanks again for taking the time with us, though.
Oh, you're quite welcome, man. Yeah. It's my pleasure.
This tour that you're currently on has a ton of stops, and it seems like you've been on the go your whole life. does constant motion inform rock and roll, or is it just a byproduct of the business?
I think it's a byproduct, but it must have, you know, inform it also in that rock and roll, you know, the various inspirations for rock and roll, whether it was gospel, blues, country, all blended together from different parts of the country, you know, and you know, obviously music that came from Europe that we embraced. And so, you know, I mean, like, even like when you think about the German influence on Mexican music on the border,
yeah,
you know, how important that was, you know, the accordion and the polkas and
yeah,
such, you know. So, yeah, I think it's always been kind of like a, you know, especially here in America, in which we kind of built a whole culture on movement, you know.
Yeah.
I know my family was always, you know, even my ancestors came from deep in Mexico and, you know, migrated to Texas and points beyond, you know. So it's, our family's always been on the move, and it's always been part of our experience, you know. And I think that's always been reflective in my songs and my music.
Let's stay with On the Move for a moment. You've called various cities homes: San Antonio, San Francisco, Austin, New York. What city yeah. have you lived in the longest?
Austin, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
been 40 years in Austin, close to 40, yeah, if not more. Yeah, I got to Austin in 1980, but I was born in San Antonio, you know. And talking about movement, like, when I was six, our parents told us we were going on a vacation to California, and we never returned to Texas. So I left behind quite a few important factors of my youth, you know,
yeah.
Especially family. So
yeah,
it was it began like that, and it seems that it's going to end like that too.
Well, so, you still have musical family in Austin. A lot of us in Madison who are longtime fans of John D. Graham have him on our minds this week. Getting through some spine surgery and so forth. Have you heard if how he's faring?
I have not. I have not heard.
Yeah.
But we'll check in on him today and see what's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, it seems that he has done all right, but John D. and others have sort of stuck with Austin. You didn't.
Yeah.
How come?
Well, you know, I what happened to us is Nancy and I moved to Dallas. My wife Nancy and I moved to Dallas for 4 years, you know, and it was merely because she had a job there. She was working on a movie there. And it turns out that we ended up in this beautiful hotel that was built in 1937. And it was the kind of epicenter in Dallas for the art scene, you know. So I was able to, you know, host a lobby kind of guitar pool Q&A with various artists that were coming through that were my friends, you know.
Yeah.
And we performed the lobby, and that was really cool, you know. And then, after 4 years of being in a hotel, which was wonderful, great experience, but, you know, I've lived my whole life in a hotel and I just wanted to get back. And especially, so we went back, we're only about 35 minutes outside of Austin, you know,
okay.
And we ended up on a friend's, ranch out there. So, we have a lot of room and, it's just us. Mm-hmm. And our two dogs, but all my kids are in Austin now. So
yeah, okay.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
Let's switch gears to the new record, Echo Dancing. As I mentioned in the intro, a collection of your past songs that you've reimagined. Alejandro, that sounds like it may have been both fun and painful. What was it like reversioning those 14 songs?
I must say that it was never painful for me. I mean, you know, some songs take on more depth as you age and you have more experience and you're looking back on certain events in your life, of course. But I'd say the song that carried the most weight in the reconstruction of these songs was Sensitive Boys, you know.
In what
and
way?
Suddenly, just the words really kind of resonated with me in a different way, a much deeper way, a much more kind of melancholy way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and since then, my oldest brother has passed, you know, and I'm learning of other friends who have passed, and the song, Wayne Kramer just passed, and that was really important. He was very important to me, so, you know, the song kind of suddenly takes on more weight, and as we're performing it and kind of exploring the different ways of approaching the song. So, yeah, that was one that really got to me. I think Outside Your Door was another one because it was a True Believers song, and it was on a record that was never released, was supposed to be released, and we got dropped just before the release of the record. So the Believers were a really important band for me, and that song reminded me of all the hopes and dreams that we had as a band, you know, and that it kind of fell short, you know.
Your catalog is so long and deep. How did you choose which songs to include in the project?
It really was kind of random, but it began with me listening to a record that people had done for me when I was ill called Por Vida, the songs of Alejandro Escovedo. And there was a version of Wave by Calexico that I really was attracted to. And that's what kind of sparked the whole thing. And also when I went to Europe to record the record, excuse me, I first played in Spain. And when I played with this wonderful pianist, young pianist, Jordi, and we did it as a piano duet, you know, that song, Sensitive Boys. Mm. So it kind of laid the groundwork for those. And those were the first two that I recorded when I got to the studio.
If you just jumped,
I was just going to say that once we recorded those two, it kind of like set us on a path, you know, and we were ready to embrace everything that happened, you know. So it was cool. It worked out really well.
I'm talking with rock musician Alejandro Escovedo. His new album is called Echo Dancing, just released. He plays at the Barrymore Theater on Atwood Avenue a week from tonight. Alejandro, I mentioned in the intro that you're known for always searching and pushing boundaries and norms. So you must be constantly learning. What did you learn as a creator in the act of recreating your own music?
You know, it really inspired me for more records and more recording. It just really kind of was such a joy, and the results were so beyond my expectations. It really just kind of opened. And it took me back to kind of like the beginning of what I found in rock and roll that I really loved. You know, people always associate me with this Americana thing and cowpunk and whatnot, you know. But originally, I mean, honestly, I started playing music because of Patti Smith and the Stooges and the New York Dolls, Mötley Crüe. You know, Judy Nylon, who I played with, you know, Brian Eno was huge, Bowie, of course, you know, so
yes.
It really took me back to that period of time and all those records. Cluster was a band I really loved, you know, I love those Eno Cluster records. So, you know, it took me back to that kind of stuff. And I'd always had one song on an album that kind of like implied that, but not necessarily a complete record of that kind of thought, you know, so it really kind of inspired a new way to kind of approach this new batch of songs that's coming along.
It's cool to hear you say that inspiration was a byproduct of making the new project, because inspiration is the greatest gift a creator can ask for. And when you reimagined the songs, you were also putting a great deal of faith outside yourself, and you were placing it in the hands of the players you chose to work with on the project. Tell us about those guys.
Well, it's Antonio Gramantieri, who goes by Don Antonio. And then it was Nicola Peruc, who is also a brilliant, brilliant keyboardist, who plays with a very big star in Italy by the name of Zucchero. And Zucchero is world famous pretty much, but Nicola is his pianist. And it was just the three of us making the record. And you know, they also, like, Don Antonio's music is very soundtracky, atmospheric. Mm. It's very broad and has a lot of beautiful kind of atmosphere to it. So they were the perfect people for that project. And, you know, we got along famously. And, you know, it really was a collaboration, I must say, you know.
a lot of the words that you're describing, the musicianship of those players really does come through in echo dancing. And the work was done in Italy, just as you did, I believe, with the Crossing album 2017. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? Why Italy?
Because it's Italy, you know. I mean, who wouldn't want to go to Italy and enjoy the great food and wine? And the people are just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the musicians I have found are as good as anywhere in the world. So, you know, in that particular studio, Crinoli Lab was just a joy to work in, you know. You kind of live on the premises. It's on this high mountaintop, and so it overlooks valley of vineyards and orchards. And you know, I would run and think every morning, and then get into the studio and bring three or four songs, and we just start going for it, you know. So yeah, it's an amazing place. And you know, I also want to record in Spain one day because the musicians are so interesting in that country also, you know.
Can you speak any Italian?
Just barely, you know, enough to get, but you know, it's funny because I speak, when I do my interviews in Italy, I pretty much speak in Spanish, you know, and we get along fine. it's always understood. Yeah.
Alejandro Escovedo is a San Antonio born singer songwriter. His new album is called Echo Dancing, just released. He plays Barrymore Theater on Atwood Avenue on the East Side a week from tonight. Alejandro, excuse me, creating, producing, performing, that progression of activity forms sort of a lifespan for music projects. Do any one of those acts provide you more satisfaction than the others?
Well, they're all equally interesting, and they're all equally a challenge, you know. So they've all been part of the, it's like all one thing, it seems, sometimes, you know. Going into a studio at this point in my life is as easy as strapping on a guitar and turning up the amp, you know. So it's all, someone told me once that there comes a point when you do something for as long as we've been doing all this stuff, that you become, it becomes one and with you, you know, you become one with the expression, you become one with the guitar, you become one with the language that creates songs, you know, so you begin to breathe it, right, you know, and it's true, like everything that seems to happen in life kind of connects to that eventually in some way.
What does that feel like?
Well, it's a great feeling. At this point, it's a sense of, you know, like accomplishment in a way, you know, that maybe, you know, whatever it may be for a particular person, but it may be that at this point now, the naysayers, the people who told me I couldn't, the people who degraded me for whatever it was I was doing at the time, whether it was musically or just culturally, you know, racially, in schools, in the education system, that were constantly telling that I couldn't. At this point, I sit back and go, but I did, you know, I did do it. And with no help from them, obviously. Mm. You know?
Alejandro, our time is getting short. Our regular listeners to this program know that I like to do something called a lightning round. I'm going to ask your indulgence for a minute. I like to do this especially with big shots like yourself. I'm going to mention a few things here on a short list, and I'm going to ask you to give me your thoughts on these particular items in the course of like 5 or 10 seconds, like a game show.
All right.
Are you up for that? I guess I talked you into a corner on a yes answer, didn't I?
I don't have much of a choice. Yeah, let's do
okay,
it.
Okay, good. I wish we had our lightning round button music to play, but that's okay. Here we go. First item on the lightning round. Here we go. Best barbecue in Austin.
Sam's Barbecue.
Best pizza in New York City.
Oh, man, there used to be a little corner shop on the corner of 14th and A that I just loved, and we would always go to that one. Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Well,
I'm sorry, but that shop was amazing.
We've got the corner name, though. That's good. Here's the next item. the name of a rock and roll musician who's based in Europe that Americans need to know about?
Don Antonio.
Okay. Here's the next one. The guitar you no longer own but wish like hell you did.
Well, I had a 59 Les Paul Jr. that I just adored and cherished, but it disappeared.
Okay, next item. Just have a couple left. You have to pick one or the other and stick with it on stage for the rest of your life. More reverb or less reverb?
More reverb.
Okay. And then finally, any Madison memories stand out for you? You've done so many wonderful shows here, and so many people are looking forward to your performance next week, but I just can't help but ask you finally, it's okay if Madison just blends into the tapestry of your own movement.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I love Madison. You know, I've been working with Tag for years.
Yes.
And, I have, I think it was at the Barrymore that I opened up for Taj Mahal. And just had a hell of a time. And Taj was so cool and just so great. He's a wonderful, you know, iconic musician. And it was that show that I remember just having such a wonderful time. And it was early on. It might have been one of the first times I ever went to Madison. It was one of the first times I went as a solo artist, but I had played in Madison with Rank and File and the True Believers. We played the OKZ, I think it was called.
OK's Corral.
OK's Corral.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Like so many great rock and roll clubs, it met its demise by fire. Now that's just a grassy lot where that was.
That's too bad.
Just down the hill from the Capitol. Alejandro mentioned Tag. That's Tag Evers, the promoter with True Endeavors. I almost said True Believers. And I will tell you that my fondest show memory of your many performances here was at the Orton Park Festival in 2017. I think some of your selected band members were stuck in Chicago or something, and you just pulled out this ball of fire that night, and people crawled off the property. It was a fantastic show.
Was that the show with Nick when Nick played with me?
Yes. I think.
And you know, real quick, little side note, but that's when we picked up our dog Suki too. We got her in Wisconsin. So
how's Suki doing?
She's great. And she's awesome.
Good deal. You got a Wisconsin dog. Alejandro, thank you so much in Toronto for starting your day with us and for being on the Friday Buzz. It's been a true pleasure talking with you.
Well, thank you, man. We're headed for Kalamazoo now. But thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was great.
You're so welcome. Safe travels.
All right. You too, man.
Thank you. Alejandro Escovedo is a San Antonio-born singer-songwriter. His new album is called Echo Dancing, just released this month. He plays the Barrymore Theater, as we spoke to on Atwood a week from tonight. The Barrymore is on fire right now with great shows. Suzanne Vega plays there next Tuesday night. That'll be a great show and a great week of music at the one and only Barrymore Theater, Atwood, Madison. The Near East Side is where it is indeed at. All right, more live music picks ahead with Encore Malhotra and Encore's Picks for the weekend and beyond. And then the editor of the Progressive magazine, WRT legend Norm Stockwell, joins us to talk about a big progressive celebration coming up on the 100th anniversary of Fighting Bob LaFave's run for president. That's coming up after some announcements and this station ID.
Hello, my name is Alejandro Escovedo from Dallas, Texas. You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison, Wisconsin. We'll be right back.
puoi bere solo l'acqua della pioggia. Ma
poi se non piove, ma poi se non piove,
la salute se ne va in compagnia del criminale che per qualche lira in più ci sofistica il mangiare.
Lei, lei se ne va.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Overture Center for the Arts, presenting the Broadway show The Kite Runner, Friday, May 24th through Sunday, May 26th, in Overture's Capitol Theater. Beginning at a kite-flying tournament in Kabul, The Kite Runner spans two decades and two continents, revealing a journey of forgiveness and shows us all that we can be good again. More information and tickets are available at Overture.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Arts and Literature Laboratory, Madison's community-based contemporary arts center located at 111 South Livingston Street. Arts and Literature Laboratory houses an art gallery and performance space, a writing center and library, artist studios, and a dedicated education studio, which features classes for all ages. Information about current exhibits, performances, and classes, and how to get involved as a member or volunteer is available at artlitlab.org or on social media at artlitlab.
It's the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore. And, of course, it's about an 8:35, 8:37. You know, why nitpick? But if you know a Friday buzz, you know that it is now time for your weekend plans to take shape, and there is a lot happening, so you're going to need some help. That's why Ankur Malhotra is here with Ankur's Picks. But first, here's Jim Wilson with the Ankur's Picks disclaimer.
Ankur's Picks are not influenced by any outside entities. Ankur consults with an advisory board of one, Ankur Malhotra. The cost of admission to any recommended show is of no concern to Ankur, nor the price of beer, nor the cleanliness of the venue restrooms. Ankur has one goal and one goal only in the delivery of Ankur's Picks, for you to have a kick-ass musical experience. Ankur's Picks is a trademark of the multinational corporation DJ Spin Cycle. All copy and trade therein is solely possessed. Here's Ankur Malhotra!
Good morning, Madison. Guess what? It's 420 tomorrow. Every day. Every day there's a 420. But tomorrow is special because it's Record Store Day, and guess what? There's going to be DJ Spin Cycle in the house. It's us, along with a whole host of DJs from the WRT family. We're going to be spinning at Sig's Treasure Shop on 222 North Street. There's a Crystal Corner with Earthlings, Iftikhar, and more great WRT DJs later tomorrow evening. Orchestra Sal Sol Del Mad at the Cardinal. Jane Hobson at Nottingham Co-op. Chrissy Home Team Jams at Rubinia Courtyard. And then what does that mean for the 21st, 22nd? There are no shows. It's wake after bake days.
You got to patent that slogan.
Wake after bake days.
Love it.
23rd. Andy gave a heads up. Suzanne Vega playing at Tom's Diner. Oh, no, sorry. The Barrymore. 25th, the Scatterlights. Ska at Shannon Hall, UW Shannon Hall on 25th. And Alejandro Escobedo. April 26th at that corner of 14th Street in New York. No, at the Barrymore. That's it.
That's awesome.
Ankur Speaks.
Thank you, Ankur. Jim, we're running a little bit behind. So rather than going to a music track, let's just keep the ball rolling and we'll go on with this next segment. You're listening to the Friday 8 o'clock buzz. I'm Andy Moore, segment two. On April 25th, the Progressive Magazine will host a 3-day series of events. Part party, part old-fashioned Chautauqua. The whole shebang is a celebration and contemplation of the 100th anniversary of fighting Bob La Follette's run for president as a third-party progressive candidate in 1924, 100 years ago. Progressive Magazine editor and WRT station director emeritus Norm Stockwell joins us now to talk about the celebration and to connect the dots between the political aches and pains these days to 100 years ago. Good morning, Norman, and welcome to the Friday Buzz and back home to Wirt.
Well, thank you very much. Great to be here with you, Andy.
We also have a very special surprise guest with us for this segment, someone whom I'll introduce you to in just a few minutes. But Norm, your recent piece in Isthmus anticipates, as does this beautiful new edition of The Progressive, it introduces readers in a comparative way to our current political times and the July of 1924, when La Follette announced his candidacy for president. Give us a couple of examples of political dynamics that fit both time periods.
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that La Follette was basing his run on was the fact that neither of the two political parties, neither the Republicans, who had the conservative business candidate of Calvin Coolidge, nor the Democrats, who had the conservative Wall Street banker and lawyer candidate, neither of them represented the mass of the working people of the United States. And that was what La Follette represented in his campaign. They created a brand new progressive party in order to run La Follette for president. There had been another progressive party in 1912, and there would later be another one in 1948. But this progressive party was created for La Follette's candidacy at a conference called the Committee for Progressive Political Action. And La Follette announced, as you said, July 4th of 1924, which meant he had about 3 months to build a party, build a constituency, get his name out, and run for presidency.
And of course, those were in the days when you didn't just Twitter your way into people's waking hours.
Right. There was no social media. In fact, though, it's interesting because La Follette did one of the first ever sound film campaign speeches. It was a new process, putting sound on film. And he did the first ever political speech on radio that was solely released on radio, not rebroadcast, but he was only on radio, and it was broadcast by the American Federation of Labor to workers' gatherings all across the country on Labor Day. It was a live broadcast.
Let's stay back in those times. Keep us and take us there a little bit more, Norm. I understand he was in poor health.
Yeah, so La Follette throughout his life had health issues, but particularly in those final years, he had some heart attacks. He was really suffering in a number of ways, and he and his wife Belcaisse La Follette had just done a tour of Europe. They visited many of the countries of Europe, saw the rise of fascism in Italy as it was just beginning under Mussolini in 1923, and they came back to the United States more committed than ever, but also La Follette in quite poor health at that point. And so he mounted this campaign in spite of that fact. And it ended up, you know, Bell did some of the campaigning around the country for him. His running mate, Burton Wheeler, did some of the campaigning, but La Follette also participated. They took a train, you know, around the country,
yeah.
Just as, you know, so many candidates did in those days when trains were the way to get around.
Sure.
And they did speeches across the country. Ultimately, La Follette would end up winning nearly 5 million votes, which was the largest number of votes a third party candidate had ever garnered. And in fact, remained the largest number all the way up until 1968. The campaign of George Wallace, when he exceeded that 5 million number. But there was no other third party candidate from 1924 to 1968 that could break that record.
Listening to the roles plural that Bell played, it is fascinating. She sounds like she was a real campaign partner, which predates a lot of what we waited way too long to see in the political environment nationally all these years. Talk a little bit more about what a true campaigner and partner and the work that she did.
Yeah, well, Belcaisse La Follette was an incredible political figure in her own right, an advocate for women's suffrage, an advocate for human rights, an advocate for racial equality.
What a power
equality.
Couple.
And yeah, exactly. And she was Bob La Follette's partner throughout their entire marriage, throughout his entire their entire life together. She was the one that kept the magazine going when he was sick. She was the one that kept the magazine going after he died.
Wow.
And in this conference that we're doing this weekend, we're giving out a souvenir program throughout the weekend, and I'm going to tease out the fact that it includes a special comic book that was created by political cartoonist Mike Konopacki, and Bell is the narrator of that comic. She's the central feature of this comic book, telling the story of the La Follette campaign through her eyes.
That's wonderful. The artistic placement of that is so also reflective on the publication too, and in sync with how the publication has been able to, I think, create whimsy and interest together with fact and history.
The Progressive magazine has always included culture in our pages, interviews with artists, filmmakers, musicians. Mm-hmm. We have poetry in every issue of the magazine.
Yes.
You know, that culture is very much a part of the political movement, and we try to showcase that in everything that we do.
La Follette's main platform, reading over the current issue in your writings this month, was running against government corruption. What evidence did he point to?
Well, this is shortly after the Teapot Dome scandal had broken. There was incredible corruption in government. And in those days, you know, there was not the kind of watchdogs on that in the legal system. There certainly was watchdogs in the press. And you think about the great muckraking journalists like Lincoln Steffens and so on. And the press was basically the watchdog that we had in this country. And La Follette's Weekly, later La Follette's Magazine, was one of those watchdogs. And constantly in the pages of the magazine, they would shine a light on this kind of corruption.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with the editor of the Progressive magazine, Norm Stockwell. The Progressive is hosting, as we're speaking about, a three-day series of events starting next Thursday, commemorating the 100th anniversary of fighting Bob La Follette's third-party run for president. Norm, we'll hear more specifics in a moment about the celebration. Where can people go to find more info and to register?
You can go to our website, progressive.org, and there's a little banner at the top. You click on that banner, and it takes you to all the information about the conference. And actually, you don't have to register, because it's absolutely free. All of these events are being presented free and open to the public. The State Historical Society on the 25th and 26th, the night of the 26th at the Arts and Literature Lab, and then Saturday night at the Barrymore Theater.
Okay, we actually have a celebrity guest. It's kind of the buzz is buzzing here, who's also in the studio with us. Actually, a celebrity by two counts. He's the host of our sister program, The Monday, 8 o'clock Buzz, Brian Standing. But he's here momentarily in character. At the kickoff dinner next Thursday night, Brian will appear as Fighting Bob La Follette. We'll talk to Brian as Brian in a minute. But Norm, please briefly set up and introduce Fighting Bob before he shares some historic remarks with us.
Well, I saw this years ago. Brian did a wonderful rendition of a Bob La Follette speech. And I said, well, if we're doing a Bob La Follette conference, we have to have Bob La Follette there. And so we invited Brian to come. We're doing a fundraising dinner as a kickoff to this whole conference weekend. And we invited Brian to come and be the voice of Fighting Bob La Follette to share with all the attendees.
So can you tell us, before we hear from Fighting Bob, what this excerpt with what we'll be hearing about, what these remarks are?
So this is an 1897 speech that La Follette gave. This is when he was in Congress. He had not yet become a governor. He had not yet become a senator. And he was representing his political views of what government should be.
Okay, now we've been taken back in time, and the next voice you will hear will be that of Congress, U.S. Representative Fighting Bob La Follette.
God, how patient are thy poor, these corporations and masters of manipulation and finance, heaping up great fortunes by a system of legalized extortion, and then exacting from the contributors, to whom a little means so much, a double share to guard the treasure. This violation of law by the organizations of wealth and power and individual owners of fortune is but the sowing of the wind from which we must ultimately reap the whirlwind. This widespread perjury to avoid a just payment of taxes prompted by the vice of greed is fraught with great danger to the Republic. Justice travels sometimes with leaden foot, but she strikes with iron hand. With wrongs begetting wrongs, until the wicked brood stings into desperation the millions not only discontented, is it not to be feared that they will strike back and strike hard. So multifarious have become corporate affairs, so many concessions and privileges have been accorded them by legislation, so many more are sought by further legislation, that their specially retained representatives are either elected to office directly in their interests or maintained in perpetual lobby to serve them. Hence it is that the corporation does not limit its operations to the legitimate conduct of its business. Human nature is everywhere selfish, and with the vast power which consolidated capital can wield, with the utter impossibility of fixing any personal or moral responsibility for corporate acts, its commands are heard and obeyed in the capitals of the state and nation. But in a government where the people are sovereign, why are these things tolerated? Why are not the remedies promptly applied and the evils eradicated?
Brian Standing is Fighting Bob La Follette. Brian will do his portrayal of Fighting Bob, as Norm Stockwell mentioned, next Thursday's opening night of the Progressive Magazine 3-day commemoration of the 100th anniversary of La Follette's run for president. Brian, how have you done your homework to climb inside the character who was Bob La Follette? Because he was many things, but he also sounds like he was quite a character.
Oh, he was a firebrand. I mean, you know, there's pictures of him, pontificating around this period, around 1897, during one of his multiple runs for governor, where he's standing on the back of a hay wagon, you know, lambasting the firehands who were there. He toured the state, and again, this was in an era where travel was much more difficult. Spoke in front of any crowds that he could find. We're fortunate that we have some film and radio of him from his later years in the 1920s, which is unusual for candidates of that era. So you can actually hear his own voice and see his own mannerisms.
And the attire you brought, your costuming here, but it's you'll be performing in full dress as La Follette too, and that costume it consists of some really neat elements.
Yeah, so there's a waistcoat. We worked with the Madison Theater Guild, who has a vast sort of costume mm-hmm. storehouse, and sort of asked them what kinds of things would be historically appropriate for a speech made in 1897 in Mineral Point. And so we have a long tailcoat, a vest, a collarless shirt, and ultimately an ascot that I'll be wearing at the dinner.
Very, very dapper. Norman, just a minute or so that we have left, walk us through the main events you have scheduled for the celebration next week.
Yeah, so the conference begins with a conference. You know, we have some of the preeminent historians of Bob La Follette. We have Nancy Unger, whose book, Fighting Bob. We have Richard Drake, whose book is Education of an Anti-Imperialist, talking about La Follette's foreign policy. We have John Nichols talking about the dynamics of La Follette's campaign and the legacies of the La Follette campaign carrying on to today. He talks about George McGovern. He talks about Ernest Gruening, who voted against the entering into the Vietnam War. So that'll be on the first session Thursday, April 25th at 2:00. That evening, the dinner with Brian Standing as Bob La Follette. Friday, all day panels with talking about arts and culture in the progressive movement, including a presentation by the La Follette's great granddaughter, Tavia La Follette, who's a theater professor in Maryland, but is coming out, and she's going to be doing on Friday night a brand new original work about Belle La Follette that she has composed. That's going to be at the Arts and Literature Lab. One more panel on Friday afternoon will feature Bob Kahn, a local writer who did a young adult biography for about the La Follettes. Fred Wade, a local attorney who talks about another La Follette speech from 1902. And Gary Huck and Mike Konopacki, cartoonists. And again, talking both about political cartoons in that day, but also talking about creating this comic for this program. And then Saturday morning, we're going to do a tour of La Follette sites in downtown Madison and the cemetery. Yes. And then Saturday night at the Barrymore, public presentation with music from Tom Castle and Sean Michael Dargan and Cy Khan via video with the song that he's written about Belle La Follette. And we're going to have Jim Hightower, Doug La Follette, Mandela Barnes, and lots more. So that's all Saturday night at the Barrymore Theater. And all of this free and open to the public. You can go to progressive.org and check out the whole listing by clicking on that little blue La Follette anniversary banner.
Norm Stockwell and Brian Standing, two WRT legends. Thank you for joining us on The Buzz, and good luck to both of you next week.
Right. And again, thanks just so much, Andy.
Real quickly, everybody gets a free copy of this wonderful souvenir program book that includes that comic. So it's that alone is worth the price of
there
admission.
There you go. There you go. Then that starts next Thursday, April 25th. It's the Friday Buzz. How do we transition from politics from 100 years ago to 420? But we're going to do it by previewing a big cannabis celebration at the Crystal Corner tomorrow. You're listening to Back Porch Community Radio. We're coming up and we'll preview that party for tomorrow. We're online at WRTFM.org and on the air at WRTFM 89.9 in Madison, Wisconsin, where marijuana prohibition is expected to continue into our grandchildren's lifetime. It's 8:56.
Who is it?
It's me, Dave. Open up, man. I got the stuff.
Who is it?
It's me, Dave, man. Open up. I got the stuff.
Who?
It's Dave, man. Open up. I think the cops saw me come in here.
What the hell? Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with me.
Who?
Dave, man. Open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave. Come on, man. Open up. I think the cops
saw me. Dave's not here.
No, man. I'm Dave, man. Hey, come on, man.
Who is it?
It's Dave, man. Will you open up? I got the stuff with
me.
Dave, man, open up.
Dave?
Yeah, Dave.
Dave's not here.
No, man. I am Dave, man. Will you? Come on. Open up the door, will you? I got the stuff with me. I think the cops saw me.
Who is it?
Oh, what the hell is it? Come, man, open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E. Will you open up the goddamn door? Yeah, Dave.
Dave?
Right, man. Dave. Now, will you open up the door?
Dave's not here.
Oh.
I don't know. That gets funnier every time I hear it. And obviously, there might have been some marijuana involved there. Doug Holtz, I hoped that we would have 4 or 5 minutes. We only have a couple. So let's cut to the chase. It's going to be the 420 celebration tomorrow to end all 420 celebrations. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. We're at the Crystal Corner tomorrow night, and we have a couple of fantastic bands to celebrate the high holiday of 420. So we've got the Earthlings tomorrow night. So if you have enjoyed the Earthlings locally, they were at our Willie Street Fair Underground stage of a number of years ago. They put on just a fantastic set. And then we got Iftikhar, fantastic jam rock. Get ready to dance for this one. And we also have DJs in between bands. We've got DJ Julia from Her Infinite Variety. We've got DJ Brian from Green Morning Radio. And closing out the night, we've got New Phone Rick from XL290 Radio Hours. So it is a great night of music to celebrate. And also just to kick loose after all of that record shopping all day.
Yeah, that's right. It's a right cross and an uppercut of fun tomorrow, Doug.
Absolutely, I can't wait.
Thank you for blasting in here and forgive our brief preview, but we really appreciate it.
Yeah, but I can't believe I had to follow those two. It was like nerve wracking.
Well, that's what you get. Everything worked out. Alejandro Escovedo on the road from Toronto to Michigan, stopping by the Buzz this morning. Thank you. Thanks, Norm Stockwell, Brian Standing, Doug Holtz, Jim Encore, Brian. 920 celebration tomorrow at the Crystal Corner. Insurgent Radio Kiosk is next. Chris Powers, Mud Acres after that. I'm Andy Moore. I hope you have a great damn weekend. Aloha. Kamaaina.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, April 19th.
This is Bird Note. Singers with a wide vocal range are thrilling to hear in concert. Even if you don't have any big names touring nearby, you can find birds with impressive vocal talents, like the widespread Northern Cardinal. In seconds, cardinals sweep through high to low notes many times. Even a virtuoso human singer would be hard-pressed to do that. The secret is in the clever way cardinals use their vocal organ, called the syrinx. With the right side of their syrinx, cardinals start whistling a high note, smoothly falling in pitch. Then, without a pause in the whistle, cardinals switch to the left side of the syrinx, which they control independently, and belt out the lower notes. Here's the song slowed down. Notice how seamless the whistles are. Dividing their vocal range between the two parts of the syrinx helps cardinals sing complex songs rapidly. The result seems effortless, but the best musicians always